Adele and River Lee. And if you had found yourself walking along a stretch of the River Lee in Hertfordshire one evening a few weeks ago, you'd have been forgiven for thinking you were seeing things. Because there, you may have spotted one of the most iconic pop stars from the 70s and 80s standing in the water, holding a torch along with a group of other men, desperately attempting to rescue fish. What's this all about? Fergal Sharkey, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Do you know what? The chances of finding a song about the River Lee must have been like a billion to one.
Well, shall we just say it's clearly a good thing that, if memory serves me correctly, did Adele not live in Tottenham at some point?
She must. And
of course,
it must
the River
be
Lee runs through Tottenham, so
there
I
you
think
go.
There may be a connection.
Can't imagine it was a random river that she picked, can you? No.
Not in the least.
No. Now, here you are, you're on the radio, and you're talking about not just the River Lee, but you're talking about a problem which affects a lot of rivers in England. And these are not rivers so much as things called chalk streams, which are quite unique, I believe.
They are indeed. It unfortunately goes back to a very, very long period in history, but the shortened version is there is this incredible thing called the Chalk Ridge,
right,
which runs through southeastern England. In effect, it's what makes the White Cliffs of Dover look white and creates the Needles on the Isle of Wight and indeed the whole landscape of Stonehenge.
Yep.
And as a result, it also gives birth to 85% of the world's total supply of chalk streams.
Okay.
Now, they're incredibly rare. There's only 225 in the entire planet. The only other place on the Earth where they exist is a little small pepper in the northern France. And they are and should be the most pristine river ecosystems on the entire planet.
Mm.
Unfortunately, they're not. And unfortunately, here in southern England, we are killing and destroying this globally rare resource.
So does that mean that the chalk is forming the riverbed then, Fergal?
Well, what happens is, it's a very simple idea. When the chalk falls on the North Downs or the South Downs, that chalk acts as the best water filter on the planet. So the water that comes out the bottom is absolutely pristine.
You can
drink it pretty much straight from the ground.
It
has a perfect pH of 7, comes out at a constant temperature, 10 degrees. It could be 3 feet of snow, a chalk stream will be 10 degrees. That water can take anything from months, years, and in some cases even decades to go through that filter process. And it pools in this enormous underground reservoir called the aquifer.
Yeah.
And that water feeds at a constant rate. So suddenly you've got these rivers doing three really strange but unique things. Best supply of water in the world, constant temperature, constant rate of supply. Chalk streams don't fluctuate up and down very much depending on rain.
Right.
They normally stay a reasonably constant supply throughout most of the year. That, unfortunately, is also their undoing, as that high-quality water is massively attractive to water companies. If they have to do very little to treat it before they can sell it to people, and also the fact that it surrounds the largest population centre in the United Kingdom, and that's London in the South East. And as you can imagine, water is very expensive stuff to move around. It's quite heavy, and chalk aquifer water is hugely seductive to water companies. And the simple truth of the matter is the Environment Agency and the regulators and Ofwat have completely failed in their obligations to protect these rivers, because the water companies are now abstracting them and over-abstracting them. And where there was once pristine, globally recognised environments around London, there are now, I'm afraid, nothing more than grassy ditches running across fields that were once these pristine rivers.
What an extraordinary story. And I guess, in a way, the real irony is that the places you're talking about around London, like St Albans and Chesham in Hertfordshire and Bucks, they wouldn't have even been there if the chalk streams hadn't been there, right?
Oh, completely. When you mentioned St Albans, as some of your listeners will know, The Romans created their first settlement outside of London there, Verellium, and indeed during the first excavations, they discovered the remains of, and I am quoting, ships, anchors and oars on the bank of the river at what is now St. Albans.
Good grief.
You could walk down that river right now and it's completely dried up. There is nothing there but a dusty, hollow depression on the ground.
How awful. And in the ones which have got water, Fergal, that water, just because it's there, that doesn't mean that all is well, does it?
Oh, not in the least, as these things are cumulative. And I can give you an example right now. The Upper Lee itself, which runs pretty much from Luton down to about Hoddesdon kind of area. The bulk of that flow in that river right now, almost 100% of it, in fact, is comprised of the discharge from the Luton sewage treatment plant.
Oh, wow.
All of the natural spring water has been pumped out of the river, has been taken out of the aquifer, and what now looks like the river is actually treated sewage.
Which means bad news for vegetation, it means bad news for fish.
Correct. I did some sampling myself at the Elmo Magna fishery a couple of weeks ago, and phosphate levels are incredibly high. That over-enriches the river, and that changes the whole ecosystem, and in fact, if it's pushed far enough, can kill off any of the vegetation in the river, as you suddenly have algae and stuff. In fact, I personally stood in Hampshire on the banks of the River Test, which on a global basis, the River Test should be the prime global chalk stream. There was green filamous algae growing on the bed of the River Test. It's also listed and protected as a site of special scientific interest that should be one of the highest levels of legal protection we have in England. And yet the thing has algae growing on the bed of the river. It's
goodness
sick.
Me.
It's
goodness
got a problem.
Me. Wow. And let's talk about the water companies. They're draining the aquifer, this big sponge that holds the water. And in Chesham alone, which isn't exactly the largest place in the world, Affinity Water and Thames Water take out 12 million litres a day.
That's out of one tiny little river.
Yeah.
And that might explain why half of the River Chest doesn't exist at the minute.
Yeah.
It is a grassy ditch. And you can simply go through the whole of the southeast, and cumulatively you're talking at trillions of litres of water per year being taken out of the aquifer. There should, and there are laws in place to prevent that from happening. In my personal opinion, the people responsible for overseeing that is the Environment Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And in my personal opinion, they have utterly failed in their task to protect these rivers.
And not just that, they've had a second problem, and that the fact that there's been three dry winters in a row, which really hasn't helped.
Well, it hasn't helped, but what that's actually done is expose the underlying issue, because there's nothing new about this conversation.
Mm.
And in fact, we now know that there was one eminent water engineer, even in the mid-1960s, was flagging up that, and I am quoting, the chalk aquifer was pumped almost to exhaustion.
Goodness
so
me.
It's 50 years since somebody was flagging this problem up. In the intervening years, the population of London has grown by 2 million people. And did we build more reservoirs? We have not built a reservoir in southern England since the 1970s.
Wow.
Did we bring in a pipeline to bring in water from North Wales or Scotland? There is no national system to distribute water in England or anywhere else in the UK. What we have done is allowed an industry to grow up that now water companies are currently carrying £51 billion worth of debt, and at the same time have also paid out £56 billion in dividends to their shareholders.
Goodness.
And all of that has now come at a cost of destroying some of the rarest environmental rivers on the planet.
And the actual method of this, if I've got this right in my head, Fergal, they're basically not sticking a huge pipe in the river and sucking the water out. They're getting it before it even makes it to the river. So they're taking it out of the aquifer, which is the sponge containing the water.
Correct. If you imagine a very simple thing, we can all picture it in our minds, that beautiful little stony little stream with water bubbling up out of the ground. That's because the aquifer or the groundwater level has become so high, it actually connects to the open air and starts and gives birth to a river. Now, if you put a big pipe into that bath, that huge underground reservoir, suck all the water out. You've now cut off that connection between the reservoir, the aquifer, and the outside world. So you now do not have that spring. So you now do not have a stream. And then you move down a mile, and you just keep repeating the process. So it's not exclusively, but most of it is what's called groundwater extraction. And as you described, it's simply drilling a borehole into the aquifer like a big straw.
Yeah.
And simply sucking all the water out of that straw before it gets anywhere near the rivers.
The Environment Agency are really the ones to answer for this. They've got a legal remit to protect the rivers, but they've done nothing, have they, to revoke or amend the licences that the water companies are issued with?
Well, if they have done anything at all, it's not visible. So whatever they have been doing, there's not an awful lot of it. When you listen to them talk, there's an awful lot of rhetoric.
Yeah.
And it's a classic case of, in many ways, the instinctive bureaucratic response. You would get a long litany of meetings that were held and reports that were written and consultations that were taking place and skipfuls of paperwork generated. But you then just keep asking the same simple question. Where has any of that time and effort and energy actually had any physical impact? Where has it made any things any better? I can give you a very simple example.
Mm-hmm.
In 2003, there was legislation passed in this country that all rivers in England would need to meet good ecological status.
Yep.
When that process began, I think it was about 34% of water bodies in England met that good ecological status. As we now stand, 86% of rivers in England do not meet good ecological status.
Mm.
It's actually been getting worse for the whole 15 years that the Environment Agency has been in charge.
Right.
And in fact, if the BBC are to be believed, last year we dumped 39 million tonnes of sewage into the River Thames.
Goodness me. Goodness me.
That's what's been going on. So whatever it is the Environment Agency has been doing, it's not been doing its job.
Absolutely. And what about the water companies? Is there any sympathy at all for the water companies, Fergal? Because Brits use a lot of water. They use 150 litres of water every day compared to, for example, 114 in Denmark. Do we not have a responsibility as the end user?
Oh, so we absolutely do, without question. And there's going to have to be changes. As it transpires this year, for the first time ever, according to Thames Water, there will be now a deficit of supply and demand in London.
Mm.
Now, it's not much. It's about 10 million litres of a day. But for the first time ever, we will be using more water than actually can be supplied.
Goodness.
And the more you project forward, the bigger that deficit becomes. So things are now going to have to change anyway. We're all going to have meters. We're all going to have to start monitoring exactly what water we use, how we use it, because what we're doing is unsustainable.
Mm. What would you do if you suddenly became chairman of Thames Water then? How would you change it, Fergal?
Well, listen, the simple truth of the matter is the issue right now is about investment.
Yeah.
There has been little or nowhere near enough investment in infrastructure. The water companies are now going to have to start developing those reservoirs, those transfer networks, desalination plants. And the actual big discussion right now, and it's where regulation is failing the consumer as much as the environment. All of that investment and all of that infrastructure is going to take, I suspect, quite large amounts of money.
Yeah.
And my suspicion is the government are going to have to pick up the tab for some of it. Hence, the taxpayer's going to have to pay the bill,
mm-hmm.
and we're all going to have to look forward to larger and bigger water bills and a combination of all of it.
Mm.
And it's all because somebody took their eye off the ball for the last 30 years. And I will remind your listeners, during that time, water companies have paid their shareholders £56 billion in dividends.
Extraordinary story, Fergal, and you obviously you're very passionate about this. Is it a thing where locals are very angry about this? Is there a big kind of swell to get this done?
Oh, there distinctly is, and indeed, there's any number of groups now, and I went and visited some people, funnily enough, in St. Albans a month ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was incredibly heartening to see it. It was local people, non-political, just decent, normal people who had suddenly noticed that their very precious local river did not exist.
Mm.
It had simply become a dried up ditch. And curiously, they were quite angry and quite unhappy when they had realized what the cause was.
Yeah.
That it's simply been exploited for commercial gain, and the government agencies who should be protecting that river have clearly failed in their remit to do so.
It's extraordinary how many people I interview where that story is the kind of end sentence. People failing in their remit, you know.
It is ultimately a story of incompetence.
Yeah, yeah. Well, keep the good work up, sir. Well done to you. And I can't let you go without asking you about musical stuff. Are you still doing anything or not?
I went off into the administration side of the industry.
I know, yes, you did. Oh, yeah, yeah.
30 years ago.
I remember. Was it Performing Rights Society or something? You went in, yeah.
I set up and ran an organisation called UK Music.
Yeah.
Which is still unique in the world. And UK Music is where all of the talent and all of the money of the music industry comes together and discusses their joint ambitions and provides representation and a voice for the commercial side of the music industry.
Yeah.
Those that create it, those that have the talent, and those that invest in that talent.
The music industry, could be said, is pretty much as sick as the rivers, though, isn't it?
Certainly not in terms of the British music industry. It did go through a bit of a bumpy period 10 years ago. And things changed and the industry has responded. But I can still tell you that British music is still globally dominating, still world conquering, and we are still the second most successful music industry on the entire planet.
Fantastic.
And thankfully, Britain still has generation after generation of incredibly talented young people that create music that everybody else in the world wants to listen to. Long may that continue.
Absolutely. And what was the last time you got yourself up on a stage, Fergal?
Oh, far too long ago.
Ah! Oh, bless you.
Anyway, far too long ago.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on, Fergal Sharkey. Appreciate your time.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you for the opportunity.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Enjoy your day.
Bye-bye.